You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
Welcome back to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This is episode 43. If you don't already do so, please make sure you follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to check out a lot of the things that are on the podcast. You can see pictures and more details about each episode. Now, today we're going to be talking with an actor that was in one of the most popular franchises in horror history. Of course, I'm talking about my favorite, Friday the 13th. This actor is Ron Sloan, who played Junior in Friday the 13th Part 5, A New Beginning. Now, for horror fans, they're always going to remember Junior, but Ron has a much more extensive resume when it comes to acting, with different parts in The Facts of Life, Tales from the Dark Side, and 13 Fanboy with Dee Wallace. I don't want to give away too many details about today's podcast, so let's go ahead and jump in as we talk with Ron Sloan.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Good. You hear me okay?
I can hear you great. You sound wonderful.
Well, yeah, it's all this beautiful mountain air, you know.
When I lived in Utah, I had that beautiful mountain air, but the valley of Salt Lake City gets really ugly during the summertime.
Oh, I bet.
All the smog and stuff just drops into the valley. And if you have asthma, it's a really bad struggle.
Yeah.
But how was your Friday the 13th?
Well, that was fun. I ended up doing talked to a couple folks. I talked to Carol for just a couple minutes to wish her a happy Friday the 13th, Carol Locatell. Uh-huh. And
Ethel.
Ethel. My dear mother, mother from a different.
You guys have stayed really close after all this time, huh?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, no, we talk. Well, it used to be just like on Mother's Day, I'd always call her and I'd see her. No, I'd go to LA fairly often. So I would, check in on her. We have a great relationship and I see her at conventions, a couple times a year.
That's so cool. That's really neat. I mean, it was 1984 when you had actually filmed, right? Because it came out in 85? Okay.
Yeah.
That's a long time to have a co-star that you stay in contact with. That's neat.
We worked so close together. Our chemistry, and we got along so well, was like, it just became something fun.
Sure.
Because when we're at conventions, people like hearing some of our dialogue and her yelling at me and flipping off everybody, and, so we continue it in our own personal life.
That's awesome. That's great. You stay in character.
Every now and then. But what character? What are you talking about, Mark?
Right.
That was me. Well, I am Junior.
That's one thing that after seeing the film so many times after all these years, and I finally got to meet you at Spookala, and I didn't recognize you because, I'm looking for Junior. And here you are. You're very articulate. You're very refined. You're nothing like the character. You're definitely an actor because you're nothing like that character at all.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm sure my wife appreciates that more.
Sure. So, as we get into this interview, I'd like to go back if you wouldn't mind and talk about how you got into acting. Like, what gave you the bug?
Well, it actually wasn't a bug. It was, in a sense, being lazy. That's opposite of acting. But when I was in high school, it fulfilled an English requirement. And I'd rather do an oral report or be in drama than write out something. So I ended up in drama in high school just to fulfill that English requirement. And then when I went to college, of course, I was still interested in it and enjoyed it. Again, to fulfill English requirements. My first couple years were junior college, and then I ended up going to Humboldt State University in Northern California. Decided, you know, I do have the bug now. I enjoy it. I'm going to LA to pursue my career. And I grew up in LA, so family was there. I joined the family real estate business because working for my mother, I could go on as many auditions as I want without worrying about missing work. Or if I booked something, she'd cover for me.
Oh, that's great.
It was good.
Did you do any high school plays, or was it just for the drama? Okay.
No. I did high school plays, but I never got any good parts. The teacher always had the excuse, well, they're seniors. They're leaving us, so they get the good roles. And then when I was a senior, I still didn't get any good roles. And then when I went to junior college, because I wanted to be in plays, and they went, oh, no, you have to take stagecraft and all this other crap. Not that I have anything against people who could do stagecraft, but that wasn't my desire. So I took just whatever I took and then decided to change junior colleges and went to College of the Redwoods in Eureka, California.
Okay. So you're pursuing this whole thing of acting. How did you settle upon finding an agent and really saying, okay, I want to make money on this. I really want to do this.
Well, it wasn't the money factor. No? And, you know, I can tell you honestly, it's never been the money factor. It was the desire factor. In 1975, I had just left college and driving through Topanga Canyon, California, and I saw a sign said, Will Geer's Theatricum Botanicum. And I went, Will Geer, that's Grandpa Walton and TV's Walton's Mountain. And I pulled in and there's Will Geer sitting there in his coveralls with the outdoor repertory company. And they were doing Midsummer Night's Dream. And I'm watching all these actors, and I mean, people you'd recognize from TV. And it was this beautiful Shakespearean repertory company outside. And I'm sitting there and I'm like watching their rehearsals going, God, I really would love to do this. So I went up to Will after their rehearsal. I said, Mr. Geer, how does one join your repertory company? And he said, son, you're in. I was like,
wow.
Between that, then I, at the same time, joined, her name was Lou Dressler, Lou Dressler's Patio Playhouse. She was an acting coach, and actually in my class was Cassandra Peters, Elvira.
Yep.
And Deborah Wingert.
Yep.
Deborah was all of 16 years old at the time, and Lou Dressler said to the guys in class, you guys keep your hands off this girl.
She's a minor now.
She's a baby. I was looking at Cassandra Peters personally.
Every guy I know is looking at her.
Well, you know, and she's actually a very, very nice lady.
I met her in Salt Lake City. Of course, it was, you know, I didn't know her like you did because I met her, you know, as she's appearing at a convention. But just she was more interested in the guests and their story than talking about herself. She was just so humble.
Yeah, no, she was awesome. And all at the same time, I got a job at Metro Media Channel 11, where they shot all the Norman Lear shows, All in the Family, Different Strokes, Facts of Life. I was working specials, Johnny Cash Show, Everly Brothers Show. I mean, it was unbelievable. I was working 8 Norman Lear shows at one time. A different show every night, all these specials. And I got to sit in the director's booth. I got to know a lot of actors personally. And then finally, I got a break. Well, you know, back in the 70s, you couldn't just join the union. You had to work a union job in order to join the union. But if someone hired you and you weren't union, they would be fined. It was called Taft-Hartley Act. You had to have a special talent, something along those lines, in order for them to hire you outside the union.
They had to justify it to the union why they were using you, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So I was good friends with the union rep on all the Norman Lear shows, and I was working the Steve Allen show at the time. Steve would hand me cards before the show, and he would have me hand out these little 3x5 cards to have the audience ask questions. Mm. And for example, you know, someone might say, "Dear Steve, I live in Cleveland, Ohio. Will they get this show in Cleveland?" And Steve will say, "Well, they'll see it, but they won't get it." You get the joke?
Yes, it's a joke.
They'll see it, they won't get it. So
that's pretty brilliant.
Yeah, you know, it's stuff like that. And he would pick out the funniest cards before the show. And then the people would stand up in the studio audience. He'd interview them. And they'd get door prizes, you know, 28 pounds of Rice Aroni, that San Francisco treat, you know, that kind of crap.
That's fascinating, because it's like he's literally scripting the show without scripting the show.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. I mean, I'm wrapping my head around this, and I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was a form of improv.
Sure.
So I talked to the union rep and I said, you know, I'm going to slip a card in there. And I'm going to say, "Dear Steve, I'm head page on your show. When do I get my television debut? Give me a break." And she said, and she was cool. Her first name was Anita. I don't remember her last name. She said, "Whatever you do, do not be in the studio audience. You want to be on the stage. That qualifies you as an actor." And she'll document it. So I'm backstage praying, "Read my card. Please read my card. Please read my card." I'm pacing, walking back and forth, hoping he'll read my card. And sure enough, he reads my card. You know, "Dear Steve, I'm head page on your show. When do I get my television debut? Give me a break. Where's Ron Sloan?" And he's looking in the audience. The spotlights are in the audience. I come running out on stage and I almost knock him over. He jumps. He goes, "I thought you were up there." And he goes, "Next time, I better make sure you are."
Wow.
Boom. The union rep's there. And he interviews me. I was with Will Geer's Theater at the time. So he talks about Will Geer, talks about my career doing Shakespeare. And he goes, "Well, Ron, you know, something to the effect of, here's your television debut. I hope you remember who gave it to you."
Wow. So,
I was all excited. I get off stage. The union rep's there. She goes, "Congratulations, you're in the union." And I get fired. I get fired for doing that. It's okay. Yeah, no, I got fired. The head of guest relations, because I was a page. I was an usher. You're not doing two jobs at once. I get home. I didn't care. I got in the union. That was my goal. And the next day, I get a phone call from the head of the studio that Steve Allen called and told him it was his idea, and I got my job back.
Wow.
It was cool. And two weeks later, I get an electric typewriter. I'm dating myself. An electric typewriter delivered to my house from the union rep. It was a door prize from Steve Allen. and it said, "Here's for typing up your first credit on your resume."
That is awesome.
That got me in the union, which really got me an agent. The agent I sort of had before that would send me out just on little, I don't want to say non-union stuff. It was very difficult back then.
Sure.
I'd be sent out on, I remember going to an audition for a Japanese, it was like a sports thing. I show up to the audition and I was a pretty big guy at the time. I show up to the audition and I'm handed a jock strap. I'm like, what? There was an interpreter at this audition and he was telling me, "You are to wear this. It will be for a print ad." And I turn, the guy comes up behind me and he's all, "Is this where we're supposed to be auditioning?" And I turn to him, I hand him the jock strap. I go, "Yeah, this is your wardrobe." And I was out of there. You know, back in those days, I was a big boy. I was tipping probably close to easy 225, 235, something like that.
Wow.
And that wouldn't have been very complimentary.
Your big break, do you have that on any type of video or electronic file where you can watch it? Is it basically lost in all of Hollywood?
Yeah, no, I bet it's in the archives of the Steve Allen show. I would love to find it. I probably could do it somehow through the Union archives to get the show number. I'm sure it's on something somewhere at the Academy. I would love to see it. I saw it once.
Wow.
When it was on TV. The first thing that came out of my mind in my brain was, wow, I didn't shave that day. you know, that was a good break. Shortly after I got in the Union, then I got little gigs. I was on the Dating Game. I was actually paid to be on the Dating Game. I never knew this. They would have a shill just to make sure that the game was exciting and moving.
Of course.
You know, I don't know if all of us were shills or just me, but I ended up winning, but that's another story.
Your first IMDb credit is listed as a TV series, Insight, which was a drama.
Yes, Insight. I did three episodes, and it's not really on all of it on IMDb. And plus, they have the dates wrong. It wasn't 1961. I would have been like 7 years old. I tried to correct that. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But yeah, it was Paulus Productions, Father Kaiser. I believe it was Terry Sweeney. The very first one I did, I was a stand-in / extra for Ed Asner.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, so it was Carol Burnett, Ed Asner, and Walter Matthau. Just watching those guys, it was amazing. It was just...
Now, according to the IMDb, because that's all that I could find as far as this particular show.
It's not up to date, but yeah.
The episode was Leroy, and it had James Doohan. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, Jimmy Doohan, Scotty from Star Trek.
Yeah.
That was probably the bigger role. That was the bigger role because the other two were glorified extras. This one, I played a sheriff.
Right, right. That's what it said. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that one I played a sheriff. So I actually had a handful of lines. I can't remember if it was considered an under five. You know, that term under five is under five lines.
I have not heard that. I have not heard that before. I've heard of like day player and more, you know, common terms, but you're in the
more
business.
Up to date. No, that was back then. Like okay. Now you have co-star feature. So I think under five would be more like a feature, that sort of thing. But it was, I mean, Jimmy Doohan, Scotty from Star Trek. I was like, oh my God. And so I had a great conversation with him.
As a teenager, I worked at a movie theater in Tyson's Corner, Virginia. And we were playing, I think it was the Deadpool, and Mr. Doohan came in, and it must have been his like two grandsons or something. But he came in and he brought the two kids to go watch the Deadpool. So I tore his ticket. That was my only interaction with James Doohan over the years. But it was still cool, you know.
Yeah, you know, he was great, and he made I said something to him about Star Trek, and it was actually a sore spot for him.
Really?
Because at the time they did it, he was offered a buyout for 70 reruns, and he never thought the show was going to go, so he took the money and ran.
Uh-oh.
So all those reruns you see, he did not get a dime.
Oh, I could see where it would be a sore spot. But I hope
he made more money off of conventions.
Well, I hope they compensated him with the movies that came out in the 80s. I hope.
Well, that stuff, I'm sure he negotiated, but the actual TV series itself, he did not. But he got 70 reruns. That's a lot. It ran a lot more than that, and it's still running.
Oh, it's such a popular series. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So it must have been around 1984 that you got this audition. I guess your agent called you to say, hey, I got this part for you, but you didn't know.
Nope.
Okay.
Didn't work that way. I wish.
Please tell me.
I did showcases every week. A showcase was a 5-minute scene that I would work with a partner, and we would do it at the Fountain Theater in Hollywood and other theaters around town. You pay $12, and that night there'll be casting directors or agents or, you know, whoever. You never know who's in the audience. Part of it was to keep, you know, your instrument fluid and keep working at it. Because, I mean, I'm doing Shakespeare on the weekend. I'm doing acting classes during the week. And I'm doing, you know, scenes. And one night, 1984, Pamela Basker and Fern Champion were in the audience. And I had just got finished doing a very dramatic scene. I can't even remember what it was. It was no way even near comedic. At the end of that scene, they approached me and said, "Can you play a hillbilly?" Well, you know, I said, "Absolutely." I go, "Give me a moment. I'm going through my mind. I don't want to be your a stereotypical good old boy for this." Mm-hmm. I really wanted to go take it out over the top. And I thought of a friend of my brother's that he couldn't stand, that was really goofy. And so I added that with some hillbilly and I just let it all out. And they gave me an audition the next day to come to, well, actually to come down, pick up sides and have an audition the following day.
Wow.
And that's how it started. And I met Danny Steinman. He was an awesome guy. Awesome. I auditioned for him, had him laughing his ass off. And as I left, he said, "Hey, it's going to be great working with you, kid." And in my mind, I thought, wow, I got the part. But then Pam and Fern brought me back down to reality and said, "Well, you have a callback tomorrow to meet with Frank Mancuso Jr., the producer at Paramount." And I'm like, oh. I walk in the audition and Danny's all, "Hey, Frank, this is the kid I told you about. I'm going to love working with him." And again, my mind's thinking, oh, my God, I got the part. But then, you know, the reality is you got to get through it, you know, for Frank. Sure. So you just can't let your emotions take over. And yeah. I got the part.
Let me ask you, there's a couple of questions I've got. One is, and I wanted to ask you, is do you prefer stage or film?
Film.
Video. Film, video.
Anything film, TV, video. And I'll tell you why. It's forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you screw up in some way, shape, or form, or if you're unhappy with something you just did, you do it again.
Of course. Yep.
Theater. It's live, baby. It's one shot. As far as theater goes, I loved improv. I was in an improv workshop with Harvey Lembeck. He taught the class. His son, Michael Lembeck, was a director for Norman Lear. Daughter, Helene Lembeck. Harvey passed away and Al Molinaro took over the class. He was Big Al on Happy Days. So, you know, I'm doing that at the same time as all this other, you know, I was a busy guy. Love doing comedy, love doing improv. Theater, I enjoyed it. I felt it, I don't want to say too confining. I just enjoyed film and TV so much. I didn't turn down theater jobs. I mean, I was doing Shakespeare. That's like crazy theater. That's a different language. People don't think of it, but Shakespeare is a different language.
I can't even imagine the level of intimidation on how you're able to memorize those lines, do a performance in front of a live audience. Just now is starting to make my palms sweat as I'm talking to you.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, back in the day, I mean, I couldn't do it now. I wouldn't want to do it now. But back in the day, I mean, I was excited to do it. I auditioned for Will as far as he said, anybody can play any role in any of his plays, it guaranteed at least one performance if you memorized it. I was, wow. I mean, I can't see myself doing some of these roles, but plus the work of memorizing it. Mm-hmm. So the very first kind of audition or whatever it was, I said to Will, I go, "What role am I playing?" He goes, "Oh, you're playing the role of Ralph." I'm all, "Ralph? I don't remember a Ralph in a Shakespearean play." I go, "Who's Ralph?" And he goes, "Oh, that's the guy that takes out the garbage. And that's what you're going to be doing here until you learn Shakespeare." I had to get a Shakespeare dictionary. There is a Shakespeare dictionary. And I had to look up every single word I was saying in the dictionary to know the real meaning of it.
Wow.
And then, you know, once I did that, I was able to do nice roles at his theater.
A lot of actors have told me they love a live performance. They love the theater because of the audience. Hearing that recognition, that applause is like an adrenaline rush that can't be matched. It's like a drug for people that enjoy performing in front of a live audience, you know, in a theater.
You know, you get that same feeling when you're shooting a sitcom. You're in front of a live audience.
Right.
Yeah, the benefit is every now and then they'll do a take again.
I was fortunate enough years ago to see a live taping for ABC Family, Melissa and Joey, which I had never done before. A friend of mine worked at ABC and got us tickets to go in and see how they have a handler that keeps the audience motivated and excited. They're moving, and they had three sets set up, and they're moving all the equipment, you know, as they need each set. And then they need to get the show taped for a 23-minute episode. It's choreographed so perfectly. These people are the masters of what they do.
Well, that's how I got my break with Norman Lear. All the Lear shows I did, I was working as a page that night. Norman, I was told Norman would do part of the warm-up. He'd first have a comedian, then he would come out, introduce himself, and get the audience going. And he'd always grab somebody out of the audience to play, you know, either Sally, the little girl, you know, and Sally Struthers and All in the Family, or Rob Reiner, Meathead.
Right.
He'd get somebody to improv a role. And everybody would laugh, and then they'd open the show. And one night, nobody was volunteering. I was told I was not allowed to. And he said, "Hey, Ron, why don't you come down here? You're playing Meathead." And I thought, wow, he knows my name?
That's so cool.
I go running down onto the stage. We improvised Archie and Meathead, and he was laughing his ass off, and he said, "Wow, you're really good." No, thank you. And he goes, "No, go see my casting director, Jane Murray. Tell her I sent you." The door opened, man. I got my first little like one-liners, under five, special business, all sorts of stuff. I mean, I did a lot of episodes as a glorified extra. And what that was I actually interact with the stars. I'm shaking Schneider's hand, or he's patting me on the back. And One Day at a Time, that was double pay and residuals.
Oh, residuals?
Oh, yeah, residuals. You were an actor. And then they upgraded me to like under fives. And then I ended up doing a pilot for Norman Lear, but it aired, but it didn't get picked up. It was too ahead of its time, way ahead of its time.
It's so cool talking to somebody that knows all this terminology, that has been active in the business for as long as you have, Ron. It's interesting to absorb all this information, because it helps me as far as understanding the workings of the business.
You know, it was crazy back then, but my heart was so deep into it. You know, you just keep going and keep going. And
you definitely had a passion, for sure.
You know, I did. I end up doing a lot of TV commercials, and I got to tell you, honestly, there was never a real satisfying role until Friday the 13th. That was the first, my first really big screen movie.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my first close-up, you know, I think it was like that part of, you know, "You Tell 'Em Ma" and all this stuff on the motorcycle. And I remember just them saying, "Okay, let's set up for Ron's close up." And I remember in my mind going, "Wow, this is incredible. This is just like amazing." And the pressure's on. As a matter of fact, it was hilarious because the scene I did, I think it was with John Shepard, the fight scene. And I remember, besides getting my ass really kicked, twice, once by the stunt coordinator, Dick. I mean, not Dick. What was his name? Oh, don't come to me.
No worries. No worries.
Yeah, no, I got hit a couple times rehearsing that. But after doing that scene, people came up to me, "Oh, man, that was great." The director, "Yeah, that was perfect. Blah, blah, blah." I felt like I was on the top of the world. And then the next scene I shot, I like forgot a line or something. I went from hero to zero. I remember going, "Dude, you were so caught up in your own head from the last one. You know, let's get back to reality here." And it taught me a lesson. You know, you just keep your head and keep moving and keep in character. It was pretty wild.
Ron, as you were talking about the audition process, as you went through and you had to actually meet Frank Mancuso Jr., it reminds me, I've heard different stories about Disney. Disney is very, very protective of their product. And anybody that gets into a Disney product, and I went through this in Salt Lake City when I was auditioning for different things, and they would bring in different films there. Was Frank Mancuso really protective of his Friday the 13th product? Is that why you had to meet him, since he was the producer on this movie?
Well, you know, I didn't know any better. I mean, I never thought of that. You know, basically, same thing in commercials, every show, anything I've ever done. You know, I've met the director, and usually the producers are in the room.
Right.
You know, his influence. I mean, I'm sure if he said, no, I don't like this kid, I probably wouldn't have been in.
Okay.
You know, just, I mean,
when you had said that you had to, you know, you didn't necessarily have the part until you had to meet Frank. It reminds me of the different stories I've heard about Disney, because they're like, if they have somebody that they want or the director wants, it has to be faxed to corporate. And corporate has to approve a face for a particular Disney film or.
Oh, television. I believe that. No, I landed a movie. I was running an audition, because that's what I did also for a living. After I left the studio, I became, in a sense, a videographer. I was a sort of an assistant in casting. I was the guy who shot the screen tests for TV commercials and some movies, and not TV per se, but more commercials than anything. I worked at a company called Baker Nesbitt on La Cienega near Melrose. I was shooting, I think it was called No Man's Land. I was running the auditions. I think that was Emilio Estevez. I know I met him. I met a ton of actors auditioning for it. And I can't remember who the director was, but after all was said and done of a week's worth of casting, it was a police movie. We were talking. He goes, "Ron, God, you'd be great as one of the young cops in this." He goes, "Are you union?" I go, "Oh, absolutely." He goes, "Well, get up in front of the camera, man. I want you to audition for me." And so I was hearing the sides all day long of all the other young cops. So, I mean, I already had it memorized in my head.
Of course, yeah.
And after all was said, then he goes, "Yeah, you got the part. You got," and I was like beyond excited. Then they fired the director.
Did they? And they recast it then?
Or? They recast. Oh, they recast my role and a number of roles that he picked. They still had Emilio. I remember D.B. Sweeney came in. A number of different stars.
As you're telling this story, it reminds me of a story in Utah. I got this part with a film in Utah that was going to be filmed inside the prison where I worked full time anyways. And it was with Barbara Hershey. I got the part. My agent said, "Look, you got it." The night before we're shooting, and they haven't called me with a call time. And it's like 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, I don't know what time I'm supposed to be there. And so I drove to the prison the next morning because I still didn't know. And I hadn't heard from anybody. And they had cut my part. That whole scene got cut, but the contract was signed, so I got paid for it, but I would not get any residuals. I guess somebody just dropped the ball and forgot to notify me, or my agent didn't want to admit it.
Yeah, disappointing. No, I've had a lot of similarity in different roles. I think one of the worst ones, I got hired to do a Budweiser commercial as a hot dog vendor with another guy. I get on the set, and there's also two other guys, another grouping, a hot dog vendor with his partner. And this was for like a Labor Day thing. We're shooting at the Santa Monica Pier, and I'm sitting there with the guy who's playing my sidekick. And we were the comedic hot dog guys. The other guys were the normal straight hot dog guys. And I'm watching these other guys shoot the commercial that I, you know, memorized. And we're watching. All day we're there. The sun goes down and they go, "Okay, that's a wrap." They never used us.
Were they going to film it in two different ways, like two different varieties of the same commercial?
You know, I am assuming that they were going to do that. They never got to the comedy guys. I mean, we got paid for the day shoot, but how depressing. You're sitting there 14 hours watching somebody else do your work.
That sucks. They just ran out of daylight?
No, I think it's just, I don't know why they didn't release us. Somebody, I don't know. So that, you know, there's stuff like that. And like you, I was told on one shoot that I got the part. I didn't hear anything, A couple weeks went by and I was down at Channel 11. And at that time, I was still a page at the studio and they were actually shooting the thing I was supposed to have a part on. And Mark Harmon was playing the part. And I'm there. Oh. I'm working as a page. I'm looking at the guy playing my role.
Oh.
I'm like, he was a quarterback at the time at UCLA. It was his first role. And I thought, son of a. And then nobody told me. There was no, just like you, no communication.
Right. It happens. It's,
yeah.
It sucks. This Friday the 13th film role, you didn't know it was called Friday the 13th. Did I read that correctly on the internet?
It was called Repetition.
And at what point did you learn what this was? Like, did you see the hockey mask or you heard somebody talking?
No, it was the first day of shooting. It was the very first day. It was the first day of shooting. We weren't told. I was never told. We were sitting there shooting the shit. I mean, I'm talking to Miguel Nunez going, hey, man, how do you die? You know, I mean, we went back and forth. Everybody asked each other how you get killed, you know, just stuff like that. Kind of old home week for a few of us who sort of knew each other outside that realm. Mm-hmm. Tom Morga walked by in full Jason wardrobe, mask, cleaver, and he stopped in front of the whole group and looked at us like individually, every single one of us. And all of a sudden I hear somebody say, we're in a Friday the 13th. Oh my God. And then it just was like out of hand. We were so excited and everybody was going nuts. I'm sure guys like John Shepard and Melanie and maybe Deborah Sue Voorhees, they might have known. I don't know, but I know the group I was with, Carol didn't know. I didn't know.
Had you seen the other Friday the 13th films before this?
I only saw part one and part two.
Okay.
And then if I had known I was in a Friday the 13th, I probably would have watched the rest. At that time, I was more into sci-fi. You know, I love sci-fi slash. To me, that type of horror is like a real type, you know, aliens, that type of stuff to me is like really scary.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, everybody remembers Alien. That was a game changer, I think.
It was a game changer for me. I was at the director's screening of it.
Really?
Oh, man. I'm in this big lounge chair at the Directors Guild. And at those screenings, you're not even allowed to have popcorn. You can have no food or drink. And you have to stay till the last credit. Nobody gets up. Everybody gets acknowledged. But, I mean, that was a scary movie.
Oh, it's terrifying. I mean, I think it still kind of holds its own even now. When you watch
it's the best of the series of the franchise. That was the best.
You know, you look at a lot of movies that are filmed in certain time periods and like the clothing, the cars, the hair, it dates that. But if you look at Alien, it can't be dated.
Oh no. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Oh no, that's a 2027 spaceship. No. Look at the bumpers. There's a lot of chrome on that bumper.
So your character Junior, you're the only thing that you had been given as far as the audition process is to play a hillbilly, over the top hillbilly. Is that safe?
It wasn't even over the top. It was just I'm to play a hillbilly. It was my interpretation of a hillbilly, and you know I kept what I did in the audition, and then it got notched up with bouncing off of Carol. Uh-huh. I mean, we fed each other.
You did.
We fed each other. You know, Carol had a big role. I mean, she was great, man. She was great. I love working with her. She, very, to this day.
Very dysfunctional family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your character is somewhat of a bully, though, because you've got all these kids at this, like, specialized camp next door. Both you and your mom hate them, and you're going to, you know, your mom even makes the threat of blowing them up. I'll wear a bomb next time or something, she told the sheriff.
I don't think you can get away with that now, but
no. You know, your character is kind of a bully character. He's, you know, he's kind of, I guess, low functioning, you know, over the top hillbilly.
Casting, huh? Yeah.
Not at all. That's what I'm saying. You're definitely an actor. Because when I met you in person, I'm like, this guy is really articulate. You're very refined. And then to know that you played that character, it's like, that had to be such a fun character to play where it's like, look, you know, we're taking off all restrictions. You know, you play this character. What was the direction that you were given by the
director? I mean, we weren't really formed in any sort of mold that they wanted to accomplish. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to keep it moving. And we're the comic relief. I think we're the first comic relief in any Friday the 13th.
Absolutely.
Might have been the last. I don't know. No, there were no restrictions. So anything we wanted to do, and Danny would rehearse, we would rehearse some stuff. You know, he kind of liked to see where we were going, what we were doing. And, oh, yeah, man. Yeah, that would be great, man. You know, that sort of stuff. keep that, do that. His end was partially technical. You know, I want you to look over here, or, you know, don't forget after you say this line, you know, look at the group, or, you know, whatever, you know, hitting your marks. And he would give his influence on it. I think he talked more to Carol to bring out, like, let her really fly with it. I was just the catcher. She was pitching. I was right. Just... how fast she was throwing it, I just made sure I was at a little bit slower understanding.
Sure. I was talking with another person on a different podcast episode, and we were talking about, as an actor, when you're playing a scene with another actor that is very talented or good at the craft, it's a lot easier. Your job's a lot easier. If somebody isn't a strong personality or not that strong of an actor, it makes you have to bring the emotion, and it makes it more difficult. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, well, I've been very lucky. I mean, you know, having Carol D. Wallace from 13 Fanboy, oh my God, that was graduation day. She is an amazing actress. Amazing what she brings to the character. Amazing what she gives to her fellow actors. And we went on a wild ride that was like a drug. I got to tell you, when I left after a couple weeks of shooting, I wanted more. I was so in love with doing what I was doing. I mean, we brought out the best in each other. So it wasn't a one-way street. Mm-hmm. We brought out the best in each other, and we had so much fun, and we developed that relationship. It was really special. And even to this day, I know if I run into her anywhere in the world, we pick up where we left off. We during our screening in Los Angeles of 13 Fanboy, my wife got to meet Dee. I kind of made a comment, well, this is my wife away from wife. and they hit it off. Just so much fun. Dee was so cool because my sister-in-law loves Dee Wallace ever since E.T. and all everything. And of course, my sister-in-law couldn't be at the screening in L.A. at that time. And Dee goes, oh, let's send her a little video message. And so she recorded telling her, you know, why aren't you here? And going through this whole, it was so cool. And well, she just have the heart. She's special.
Well, I saw the clip of you two acting together when she pulls out the gun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You guys, you know, to give you credit, Ron, you really, you act amazing in that scene. I mean, I know Dee Wallace and she's awesome, but you two are definitely at that same level in that scene that I watched. So I have to give you some credit, because if anybody's listening to this, if you get a chance, jump on IMDb and look at Ron Sloan's reel.
Yeah, the demo reel.
You guys do a really great job together.
Yeah, there was a wonderful chemistry there. And it's interesting because there is a scene on my demo reel that's not in the movie. It's a little warm, fuzzy scene of the two of us in bed, kind of going over what happened or so far happening in our lives. And it wasn't kept in the movie for a number of reasons. You know, they didn't really want to show me warm and fuzzy at that time. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of those types of scenes that aren't in the film, but do see it on IMDb because I am proud of it.
Awesome scene.
That's a great scene. And the bedroom scene, it's emotional and tears. Yeah, you know, it was so funny because there's a hallway scene where I'm arguing with Dee and giving our grandkids back to their parents and fighting with Dee. And she hit me in the chest. It was pretty funny. And after the scene was over, she goes, oh, my God, did I hurt you? No. I mean, it added to the tension in the scene. You know?
As a human being, of course, seeing her play these different roles in Cujo and E.T. and
oh
stuff,
my God.
She does a great job as an actress. But when you meet her in person, and I met her, I think, in Monster Mania in Maryland. I think that's where I met her. That's who she is. Like, she'll hug you. She puts her head right up against your chest. And I'm like, oh my God, this lady's like really a sweetheart.
She's sincere. She is. It's funny you say that, because I met her for the first time at Monster Mania in Cherry Hill. God, it's probably 18 years ago, something like that.
Wow.
What's odd is, and I can't explain this to this day, I have a picture with Dee Wallace. It was in the lobby of the hotel. We were both working the show. I don't know why I have a picture with Dee. I know my wife took the picture. I have no idea why I have the picture with Dee. But when I was going over my part with Deborah Voorhees, and she was casting Dee, and she goes, "Do you know Dee Wallace?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, I have a picture with Dee." She goes, "Send it to me." So I texted to her, and she's all, "Oh yeah, you're definitely her husband." I mean, it was like,
wow.
So 18 years earlier, I have a picture, which helps me get the role.
Cool.
It was great. The universe was working.
That I was going to say, how do the stars align like that?
Oh my God. Maybe I should start taking pictures with all these wonderful actresses.
Exactly. I have a couple more Friday the 13th questions, if it's okay.
Yeah.
Did you already know how to ride a motorcycle?
Yes. That was part of kind of my, I don't want to say audition. They asked me if I could, and I said, absolutely. I had ridden just a normal street bike occasionally when I was in college, but I would ride dirt bikes with a buddy of mine. He had a couple of them, so we'd go out riding. You know, they ran me through my paces up at the ranch in Santa Rosa Canyon in Camarillo. Gene LaBelle, who was, and Dick Warlock. There we go. His name came back to me.
Oh, Michael Myers from part two of Halloween.
Yeah. So, yeah, Dick was the stunt coordinator. Gene LaBelle, you know, he was a wrestler, big time wrestler. And so they made sure I could ride that bike. And I was riding through like orange orchards and avocado fields. And they're like, okay, you're fine.
You know? Wow. How long was the shoot for that film?
My part, I was on set for 3 weeks.
Wow.
I'm sure they were over budget. My actual shooting days was 6 days.
Wow.
It was cheaper for them to have me on the set because, you know, they might throw you in a scene or do something in between. So it was cheaper to pay me for 3 weeks than to have me, I guess, on a daily coming back and forth. I wasn't complaining.
No, that's very cool. 3 weeks is a pretty darn long time.
Yeah, I was happy.
I'll bet you were. That's awesome.
I got to watch most of the movie, you know, while it's being shot. Cool. Except for the nude scenes. Those were close set.
Oh, I'll bet. Just to make the actress more comfortable.
Yeah.
You got to keep your prop head, your decapitated head.
Well, yes and no. It took a couple years to get it.
That's what you told me at Spookala. So I just wanted to hear that story.
No, it was a fluke. I was at an audition at the Las Palmas studios, and I was going to my audition. It was for a game show. I saw a sign that said Real Effects. And I went, wow, I think those are the guys that made my head. So after my audition, I knocked on the door and I said to the guy, I was in the movie Friday the 13th Part 5. I think you guys made my head for the movie. And the guy goes, yeah, your head's been working more than you have. And he takes me inside, and it was like walking into Costco or Sam's Club. And it
was huge.
Oh, it was huge, filled with like body parts and dinosaurs. And name it.
So
gore, all sorts of stuff. And they kept it in alphabetical order because he climbs this big ladder like you're getting on a plane. Like those ladders at Home Depot.
Yep.
And my head's sitting next to Sylvester Stallone's. And I'll never forget that. I'm like, wow, that's sly. Wow. And he takes it down. He goes, I'm sorry, but last week we shot you in the head. and the back of the head, the prosthetic head, is blown off. It's always been covered up with a flight cap, but yeah, it's missing.
So they repurposed it for another film.
Oh, he said it had been repurposed 5 times.
Wow! And you don't get any residuals for any of those.
Oh, what do I know? I wish. He put it in the bag. He goes, here, man, enjoy it. As I'm leaving, I run into Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's in this big old terry cloth bathrobe smoking a cigar, shooting True Lies, I think. I think that's what it was.
Wow.
And I was going to say hello to him and just, I wanted to meet him. You know, that'd be so cool. Uh-huh. And I thought, dude, you got a head in the bag here. And who knows if really you should have that head in the bag. I took it and ran, you know, I was out of there.
Did you keep anything else from the production?
No.
Did you have do you still have your script or anything?
Oh yeah, I have. Oh, definitely. Cool. I have the script. Cool. I think some of the wardrobe was mine, because I know I wore it in another movie, pieces of it that I did with John Shepard later that year called Banzai Runner.
Okay.
John and I didn't have any scenes together, but we thought it was hilarious. We're in another movie together, and we talked about it.
Well, of course, there's a huge collectible market, so don't lose any of that stuff.
You know, it's already gone. I don't even have the script of Banzai Runner.
Wow. There. What was the premiere like when this film finally, did you go to the premiere?
Yeah, I went to the premiere. He had a blind date. It was kept that way. she kept on looking at the screen and looking at me and looking at the screen and looking at me, and she couldn't separate the two. We didn't have a second date.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, it was pretty funny. I remember all of us went out to dinner. And I swear, while I'm eating, she's looking to see if I'm eating it like slop stew, like Junior.
Like your character.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was pretty funny, but no great loss.
I know you stay in touch with Carol. Do you stay in touch with the rest of the cast, or do you see them at conventions regularly?
Well, I do see, you know, every now and then at conventions. Deborah Voorhees and I are very good friends. And she's come over to our house a few times, her and her hubby, and spent the night on their way to LA or someplace. We talk probably, I don't know, once a month or so, depending on what's going on. Yeah, I talked to her a couple of days ago. She's that's awesome.
Cool. That's fantastic. How many conventions have you done over the years? Because
Not a lot.
People need to start bringing you to the conventions, because you're definitely a fan favorite. You're such an over-the-top character. It was so awesome. When I saw that Spookala was bringing in you for this past convention, that's all I needed to see, because you're one of those autographs. There's not a lot of information on the internet about you, Ron. To track you down and finally get your autograph to go with the rest of my Friday the 13th autographs was fantastic. As soon as I saw you and Ethel, I'm like, oh my God, I got to be there. I got to go there.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I'm with Sean Clark, Convention All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got great people. Oh, my God. You know, Jamie Lee Curtis, The Walking Dead. I mean, name it. He's got stars, man.
He handles most of the conventions for a lot of your horror-related actors, right?
Yeah. And he's done it for forever.
Sure.
He's a good guy. So, I mean, that's the perfect contact. Totally perfect contact for conventions.
That's cool.
I would love to do more. You know, it's like I have never done a West Coast convention. I grew up there. I'm doing the first one next month called CreepyCon in Ontario, California.
I'm surprised, because, like I said, a lot of people love your character from part five.
Carol and I would have so much fun. You know, anywhere we go. But I mean, on the West Coast, I mean, she lives in LA. You know, I mean, I would love to do a few West Coast conventions. I mean, there's a lot of places. I haven't done that many conventions. I'm good for like one, sometimes two. There's been years that I haven't done any.
Well, in 13 Fanboy, you know, you and Ethel have that interaction, and you definitely fall right into the character roles. And I love that scene at the table.
Yeah, well, if you go to IMDb and watch it, it's bigger on IMDb. We actually continue that scene a little bit farther. It's not in the movie. It's just the first clip's in the movie, but it actually continues, and it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, you guys definitely know those parts inside and out. It's fantastic. Oh, yeah. If somebody wanted to get your autograph, is there some website or something where they could reach out and buy? Because I know a lot of different celebrities that work in these different movies, they have fan sites set up where you can order autographs. Do you have anything like that, Ron, where
people... Not really. I mean, you could try through Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I don't want to discourage it, but I have... run into a few issues. I mean, I prefer you guys coming to a convention and getting it and meeting me. I enjoy that.
Okay.
When I mail them out, it's like I've had, like 4 or 5 now where people say, oh, I didn't get it. And I mean, I have a tracking number, I'm a good guy. Like I'm doing one right now where I actually sent out a can of Bethel stew for the first time. we both signed it. I sent it out along with a picture of Carol and I with double autographs. I know the guy's honorable. He said he sent the check, showed me the picture of the check. And I'm that type of guy where I'll send something out ahead of time before even getting paid.
Yeah.
You know, and I know this will straighten out. There's a problem. I think it went to the wrong address or something. I've had a number of people saying they never got it. So I had to send out another. And it's like, I'm like, is it worth it? Don't get me wrong. If you want it, I think I'll have, my wife doesn't mind handling that. That's so, good. Via Facebook or Messenger, whatever, I'll do that. But I'd rather get paid like through, Venmo or something like that.
Sure. Some type of electronic transfer.
Yeah.
I agree. I usually use PayPal for transactions. Yeah.
Yeah. That stuff works. I mean, I don't need a check. I don't need cash. I don't,
And then everybody's kind of protected with their kind of insurance as far as stuff getting there, it's more guaranteed. So,
I mean, this last stuff cost me $20 to ship out.
I cannot believe the prices of the Postal Service now.
It's through the roof.
Oh, it's really gone up the last few years.
Just a little 8x10, because I don't, I send it in cardboard. I don't send it in an envelope. It's going to get dinged or whatever. And it was $6 plus whatever. It worked out to like $10. I'm like, oh my God. What time is it your time?
It is 11:04, and I'm going to pick up the custom frame picture of you and Ethel that's at Hobby Lobby, because they notified me this week that it's ready. All right. Thank you, Ron. Be safe and have a wonderful...
Many blessings, my friend. I'll see you maybe at another convention.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Happy New Year to you. Thanks, Ron. And so I end this episode the same way that I end it every week, by telling you to be good. And if you can't be good at it. And if you're sitting in prison, you're not good at it. Good night, everybody, and happy Friday the 13th.